This is The Think Tank, talking about the major economic, political, and social issues of the week. On the Voice of Arizona, News Talk 92.3 KTAR, here's Dr. Mike O'Neill and Mike Russell.
All right, here we go. Another episode of The Think Tank. Thanks so much for being with us. Here at The Think Tank, we tackle all the issues, all the pressing issues of the day, both political and non-political. We do enjoy the political, though, don't we, Doc?
We live for it.
Oh, yes, we do. And we try to find commonality. We're not looking. This isn't a battle. This isn't right versus left. This is finding common ground and really getting deep into the issues of the day. With me, as usual, is Dr. Mike O'Neill. You can find blogs, articles, videos at MikeO'Neill.org. Today, we're looking outside of our great state of Arizona and the view that the media has, the local politicos around the world have of our state and really of the characters within.
Well, not a whole lot of common ground in our recent politics on the subject of Medicaid, and that's where I want to start with. We have a guest here who is the chief political correspondent for the New York Times assigned to Arizona. And I want to talk, first of all, or ask, first of all, about the Medicaid issue. This state just went through a fractious legislative session. And the legislature voted in the minds, at least, of the Republicans who hated it, to extend Obamacare to Arizona. And now that was made a little bit easier in Arizona than many states by the fact that the voters had already mandated that poor folks up to 100% of poverty level are already covered under state-sponsored care. So the increment in Arizona was only up to 133%. And that's actually turned out to be not very big dollars to do that, but it became very large ideologically. And Jan Brewer and all of the Democrats and a handful of Republicans passed this thing. The first question I want to ask from the standpoint of somebody with a national perspective is Jan Brewer, this is the finger-waving governor who signed SB 1070, is she still likely to be the darling of the political right nationally, or has she abandoned that position?
You know, Jan Brewer, I have found her to be a lot harder to define than since I got here to Arizona, which was about a year ago. When you read a lot that's being written about her, she's either black or white. You know, she is either a crazy right wing governor who wags her finger at the president, or she is someone who is crazy in a different way, who really doesn't care for the will of the people. And in fact, when you look at the way she went about with the Medicaid issue, she turned an issue that is a progressive issue, an issue that many progressive Democrats embrace across the country, and she made it palatable to Republicans in this state, to some Republicans, but she did make it palatable to some of them, arguing on the merits of it makes financial sense for the state of Arizona. And that's an argument that many Republicans have used to justify many of their decisions, and she is certainly someone who has stuck to that.
Now you said crazy in both of those sides. You said either crazy that she's for that she's waving her finger at the president and whatnot. Is that the common denominator from outside Arizona? Do the other states, the media groups, they look at our governor as just crazy?
A little bit of a joke sometimes. You know, okay. She became, especially during the whole debate over immigration laws across the country. Of course, Arizona had the first of the more strict immigration laws that were passed in this country. She became sort of, you know, the queen of the border security folks, you know, people who wanted to seal the border and prevent anybody from ever crossing into this country ever again. But she became sort of the joke of the other side, to the point that there were parodies of her. There are montages on YouTube of her misspeaking this and that here and there. But, you know, and then, you know, she came out with her book, Scorpions for Breakfast, which is
she
actually
kind of played that a little bit herself, didn't she?
She did. She did because, you know, at that point, you know, I mean, you cover politics. Politics is something that today you're talking about one issue and that's what gets everybody going. And then a few months later, a year later, you know, it's something entirely different. And she played to that because at that point, being anti-immigration, being a hardliner on illegal immigration was what won you votes, and most importantly, what won you respect outside of the state. Because obviously this is her last term here, and I assume someone who's been in office for, what, about 30 years now?
And has never lost an election.
Exactly. Is not looking to simply disappear off the face of the earth. She's still relatively young. I mean, she's in her 60s. She has a lot of life in her. Look at Joe Arpaio. He's in his 80s, and he's a sheriff, you know. So, you know, I think that she was looking ahead, and every politician makes those kind of calculations.
I would add, and you can react to this, but she really benefited from the character. I mean, she became a darling, on a fixture on Fox News. There may be a future for her there. I don't know after this Medicare vote whether that offer would still be good. But it seems to me, in terms of having a national persona, you have to embody something. And for a period of time, at least, she came to embody the tough on immigration, very conservative approach to politics.
Right. And maybe, you know, when you look at what's left of her tenure, about a year and a half, right? She leaves office at the end of next year with the Medicaid. Now you have a legacy that's not necessarily a positive one for one group of people and negative for another group of people. You have a legacy that's maybe open to interpretation from people from both sides. And I think that opens up her possibilities politically as a national political figure. Of course that, you know, in doing that, she goes from being the Tea Party type of Republican, the more radical thinking type of Republican, you know, in terms of the ideologies that they embrace, to being a more mainstream type of Republican, someone who is accepted in different forms. So she can say, yes, I did pass that law that was the most strict in the country and I championed it, but I also saw when it made sense that it was right for the state of Arizona to embrace an element of a national policy, health policy, that has been widely criticized by Republicans, but that the voters in the state, as you mentioned, Mike, had already approved. And that made sense for the state because the state, in the end, based on her numbers, is going to make money out of this, or at least is going to spend less money than it would if it didn't expand
Medicaid. And the financial side, I think, was clearly the overwhelmingly positive argument about this. This is $1.6 billion coming into the state. And in so doing, she embraced one of the two wings of the Republican Party, the business country club, rational manager side of the Republican Party, ticked off the Tea Party that had been her forte until that moment. We will be back in just a few seconds. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the other mainstay, which is the issue of immigration and how that is played.
You're listening to The Think Tank on the Voice of Arizona. News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
And we are back. Thanks for being with us. Taking a look at political views from a writing, a print media standpoint, outside the state of Arizona, their image of us here in the great state of Arizona. Joining us on the phone right now is a very special guest, Ralph Hollow. He's the Washington Times chief political writer. Thanks for being with us, Ralph.
Hey, Joy. Thank you.
This is Mike O'Neill.
Hello.
And good to talk to you.
Yeah.
I want to ask you a question specifically about Jan Brewer. Jan Brewer became famous nationally, wagging her finger at the governor, standing up for SB and signing SB 1070. But recently, she has, in the minds of her detractors, embraced Obamacare by fighting for an extension of Medicaid. Do you think she has lost, as a result, has she lost her position as the sort of the darling of the right?
Well, it depends on how big this plays and how much attention is drawn to it, and whether she finds a way to use the popular expression, back away from it sufficiently. If she doesn't, yeah, it's going to hurt her, of course.
Well, I don't think that issue is going away, because I, first of all, expect there's going to be a court challenge to it. And secondly, the opponents in the legislature have indicated that they're going to mount an initiative. And if they can get 86,000 signatures in the next 3 months, not only does it go in the ballot for 2014, but it's held in abeyance until that happens. So this issue probably doesn't go away.
Well, yeah, I didn't mean the issue would go away. It's her role in the issue. Depends on how she plays it and how people who do what we do for a living, what you do for a living, play her contribution or detraction from the issue. If nothing changes and it's she's still associated with those dumb words, then, yeah, it's going to hurt her.
Well, you're in Washington. How much play has this embrace of Obamacare by our governor gotten in Washington?
Well, I don't think it's gotten that much. There's just so much else going on. Immigration. Obamacare is a problem for conservatives in general because Republicans and conservatives had vowed that Obamacare would be gone by now. And instead we got Obama, or conservatives and Republicans got another round of Obama. And so whether the public cares that much, you look at the polling and it's a little bit, would you agree, it's a little bit ambivalent about Obamacare. Most people still don't like it, but they also they want what it gives them or what in principle what it gives them. They just don't want it.
Exactly. If you go through most of the major tenets of Obamacare, they tend to be widely supported. And then you ask people how they feel about the law in general. And they tend to say something like, well, I'm against government takeover of healthcare. I'm against that. So it's kind of like all the little battles they won, but they lost the war.
Well, they haven't lost the war because they still have it. Obamacare is still there.
Well, lost the war in terms.
Well, no. Go ahead, finish.
I just meant lost the war in terms of the perceptions of the overall law. Now, what's going to happen is the beginning of 2014, it's going to be implemented, and people are going to have a direct experience with it one way or the other and are liable to change their opinions based on whatever that experience is. In particular, for the rest of us who may not get Obamacare directly, what happens to our health rates?
Exactly. If I were a betting man, I would say that any change will come only after people feel the impact in their pocketbook and in what I anticipate will be a diminution in the frequency and quality of their health care as they experience it. I don't know objectively whether there will be any diminution, but it won't. I think it'll be an annoyance at the very least to people. But as you know, once you take a step toward socialism, toward giving something, appearing to give something away free, what people think they're no longer paying for, something's impossible to take it back.
Well, go ahead.
Well, one of the rare times when the opposite happened, sort of, was with their British health care system, their nationalized medicine. It was really awful. I mean, you had to wait months and years for an operation. Terribly inefficient. They remedied a socialist system and made it more palatable to the populace, and got the other party. The party that wasn't Margaret Thatcher into power again. So it's not always impossible to take back bad statist socialist legislation, but it's almost impossible. And so what Republicans should have learned from this is that under no circumstances, for any reason, should they give in on things like this.
Well, I think that
The second lesson is try to nominate people for the chief executive office who are not terribly much disliked by the rank and file of their own party, or that stand a reasonable chance of getting elected.
Well, those unfortunately may not be the same person. But I wanted to move you to the other sort of big raging issue that has played out here and certainly nationally, and that is immigration. And I wanted to ask about your impression of how Arizona's approach to immigration is perceived nationally, and what is the image of the state with respect to that right now?
That depends on who you talk to. People who have thought that the rule of law is what's paramount, and therefore there can be no amnesty in any way, shape, or form for illegals here. Admire Arizona and think Arizona is the paradigm for the rest of the nation when it comes to, in a way, it approached both the penalties for illegal immigration and the enforcement. And I don't think that's going to prevail, unfortunately, because for a variety of reasons. I think what is more likely to happen, I say likely, not sure. Nobody knows what sure is going to happen on immigration. I mean, Rand Paul seems to have a pretty good approach to it. It emphasizes there's no amnesty period. It emphasizes expanding work, in effect, expanding work permits, bringing in people who are needed to do jobs in this country, who offer an advantage, an enhancement of the American economy. That makes perfectly good sense. You know, it's hard to argue that there's anything other than good about that. Now, Democrats are going to argue
Ralph, their constituents. Ralph, I'm sorry. I'm going to have to get. We're up against a hard break right now, but we really appreciate you joining us. Ralph Hallow, Washington Times chief political writer. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll be right back with more of the Think Tank right here on News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
You're listening to The Think Tank on the Voice of Arizona, News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
And a very big thank you to Washington Times chief political writer Ralph Hallow for joining us. And with us right here in studio, Fernanda Santos. She is the Phoenix bureau chief for the New York Times. And what we're talking about is the view from outside our great state of our great state. In particular, we've talked about immigration, and I think the word crazy came up a few times when we're talking about our wonderful Governor Jan Brewer. I will ask you, Fernanda, there were two different versions when we talked about SB 1070. You mentioned it being a anti-immigrant push, and then Ralph Hallow came in and talked about being an anti-illegal immigrant push. Can we make that distinction? Can we draw the lines there? Where are we looking from outside the state? What is the view?
You know, it's a great question and a great catch by you. Ralph is right. I mean, it was an anti-illegal immigration bill. The thing is that in Arizona, the debate about immigration is always about illegal immigration. There's never been a big discussion here about the role of, you know, bringing high-tech workers into the state to do the jobs that we can't find Americans to do, mm-hmm. you know, the sort of high-skilled jobs. It's either the effect of illegal immigration on the border and then in the cities where immigrants, illegal immigrants go to, like Phoenix, for example, or, you know, more specific to certain regions of the state, the role of immigrants in the farming industry. And many of these, the majority of them, according to the estimates, are immigrants who came into the country illegally and are doing these farm jobs. But it is a great distinction, especially at this time that we're discussing immigration reform in Washington, because it is not, you know, the state of Arizona became known as an anti-immigrant state. When in fact, the effort was to curb the onslaught of illegal immigrants who were coming in here, mm-hmm. especially at that time. The numbers have gone down significantly since, and they're now, you know, a lot of the influx is going into Texas now, not so much Arizona. You know, it is a an important distinction to be made when you talk about perhaps part of the reason why this year in the legislature here in Arizona there wasn't a lot of talk about bills going after illegal immigrants was because, you know, it isn't so much a burning issue as it was in 2010. Let's not forget that that was right around the time when a rancher was shot and killed in near Douglas, Arizona, and it was believed that that rancher had come in contact with either drug smugglers or illegal immigrants, and so some kind of, you know, shots were fired, he was hit, he was killed, and that was what sort of inflamed the tensions here in the state of Arizona. So there was a very specific event to that, and the reality today is different.
That did give this whole issue a very emotional color.
Right. It was the perfect type of event that any politician is looking for, right? I mean, here's a man, a law-abiding citizen, who's killed right on the border.
On his own property.
On his own property, exactly.
And we conflated issues of farm workers crossing the border to get work with drug smugglers and human smugglers and threw them all in one basket and looked like a pretty lousy basket.
Well, you know, those are very difficult, I shouldn't say difficult. Those are actually easy distinctions to make if you make the effort to learn about it. I was actually surprised when I went to the border with four of the Gang of Eight senators that Senator Schumer, for example, had never visited the border, even though he has very prominent roles in Washington when it comes to laws regarding national security, appropriation, judiciary committee, right? So it was his first time there. So I think a lot of times, even legislators who are from Arizona have never even taken the time to go to the border and understand how things play out there, and even different parts of the border, how different the effects of immigration have, be it in the farms or in the towns that are right along the border or even within. Tucson makes tons of money out of the commerce that legal immigrants from Mexico.
Tucson and Nogales.
Nogales, huge. Yes.
Which has been cut. If you cut the inflow of day visitors to Nogales, you strangle the town of Nogales.
Right, and it's a whole other issue. I actually wrote about it based the story in Douglas, which used to have a thriving Main Street, a thriving small business district, serving the copper smelter workers there, and then the Mexicans who worked in the maquiladoras on the other side of the border would come with their paychecks to shop, and now it's dead because it is very hard to cross, very hard to get a visa, very expensive to get a visa, and Mexicans just don't get encouraged. Also, I guess it plays a little bit of a role, the fact that there's a huge Walmart across the border,
too. And one thing that most people don't realize and will be very surprised to hear if you haven't crossed the border is a wide range of goods are cheaper in this country than in Mexico.
Oh, absolutely. And that's exactly why people would get their paychecks. They would cash their checks on Saturday, and the first thing they would do was walk across to Douglas, if you came from Agua Prieta, or Nogales, Arizona, if you came from Nogales, Mexico, to shop. And then you would just go back home. They didn't want to stay. It's cheaper to live there, but it's cheaper to buy here. So it was the perfect sort of, you know, existence.
And it's so easy to conflate many things. I mean, our own government, the references to headless bodies in the desert. Well, it turns out that was a few hundred miles away, and it was on the other side of the border.
Right, right.
But it was just part of this big picture of Mexico danger, immigration, you name it. It got conflated to one big thing.
When in fact, you know, and this is an interesting thing because Mexico sends a lot of tourists to this country. It's a growing economy, in so much so that many immigrants who went back, people who had crossed illegally who went back to Mexico decided to stay there because they feel that there is an opportunity for them to establish themselves back in their home country and so forth because the economy is doing better. So in many ways, the United States in general and border states in particular, although there is a bigger effort now both in Arizona and California to bring the communities closer, have been missing out on an opportunity to cash in on a neighbor that has people who are eager to come here to spend their money in this country. So it's not just a bad thing. It's not just Mexicans want to come and take the job away from Americans, as many have said. You know, there are many Mexicans wish they could just cross the border, go out for dinner with the family, go to the mall, shop, and then go back home. If you ever drive across the border, you see the trucks loaded with old washing machines and dishwashers and old bikes that people are taking there because it's very expensive to buy there. So they take the old stuff they got here, you know, and they cross, they give it to their relatives there, then they come back and buy new for them.
And the other thing I think that people don't realize, if you straight line out what's going on with wages in Shanghai and the urbanized areas of China, that a lot of that manufacturing that has occurred in China, it can logically end up in Mexico if some of the drug violence gets subdued, that the Mexican wages are becoming increasingly competitive. On a world basis.
So going back to the view from outside Arizona to Arizona, are we just seen as a bunch of racist gunslingers, or is this or people taking a step back and realizing, hey, we aren't bordering Mexico. We aren't on the front lines. Let's see how it all plays out. Or are they leaping to judgment?
You know, I never had a sense that in spite of the way the immigration SB 1070 and everything was covered here, that people outside of Arizona thought of Arizonans in general as gunslingers, racist people. I did have some people tell me, because I'm an immigrant, when I came here, half jokingly, make sure you have your papers with you all the time, you know, in case you get stopped by Sheriff Joe. I've never been stopped by anybody, but I know many people who have. But at the same time, I never felt that there was this feeling that everybody in the state was the same. I think it's pretty clear that, you know, especially in a state that in many ways resembled New York in the sense that it is primary voters who elect people into office, right? Except that in New York, it's mostly Democrats, here it's mostly Republicans, that it doesn't necessarily, the makeup of a legislature doesn't necessarily reflect, you know, the political beliefs of the majority of the people in the state. And that's the disconnect that exists here in Arizona. But being here has allowed me to see the shades of gray much more clearly than I did, you know, when I was all the way across the country in New York.
But when you were across the country, you did. It was a little more black and white.
It was, you know, because I'm generally skeptical of the media itself. You know, I'm one of those people, like, I even don't like to use, sometimes we use a freelancer to go cover, help us cover something. I don't generally like to do it because I like to see it with my own eyes. And maybe because I come from another country. And so the things that informed me were very different. I never really had this black and white view. But it's certainly, when you come here, it makes you understand a lot better, especially when we interact with people, you know, your neighbors, your friends, the guy at the supermarket. Did you realize that people are actually pretty,
we're not that bad.
You're actually pretty
right.
friendly
hey,
here.
Check us
I was
out.
Waiting for the cameras to come out and say you've been punked, you know, because I said people just can't be that nice. But Arizona's that are very nice.
Well, that's good to hear. And that's Fernanda Santos. She is the Phoenix Bureau Chief for the New York Times. Thank you so much for joining us. It has been a very insightful meeting. When we come back, Dr. O'Neill and I are going to tie a bow around this and see what we've learned, see if we can find some common ground right here on the Think Tank. News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
You're listening to the Think Tank on the Voice of Arizona. News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
And a very big thanks to Fernanda Santos. She's the bureau chief, the Phoenix bureau chief for the New York Times. And we also want to thank Washington Times chief political writer Ralph Hallow for joining us as well. Dr. Mike O'Neill is here with me. You can find more about Dr. Mike O'Neill at O'NeillResearch.com. That is, that's for public and marketing opinion research and all the fun therein. This has been pretty enlightening, excuse me, as we looked at the media's view of Arizona from the outside looking in. And right out of the gates, Doc, I want to talk to you about our governor. Now, she's joined a long line of characters here in the state of Arizona.
We've had
Meekum,
some interesting
Groves
governors.
Moffords, Napolitano. I mean, we've done it all. So the word crazy came up a few times, and once again, this is an outsider's view right into the state of Arizona. The word crazy, do you think, and this has been my opinion, maybe you differ on this, I think her biggest crime politically is not being good in front of a camera at all, freezing up, a lot like W did, freezing up in front of a camera.
She was put herself in a position where she could be caricatured.
Okay.
And then the caricature came about, the wagging finger and all, and she milked it for everything it was worth.
Yeah.
So
sold some books, didn't she?
She sold some books. She got a whole lot of Fox News coverage. I think she became the darling of the Tea Party for standing up to the president, both figuratively and literally, or having this sort of aura about that. SB 1070 became a national cause. The point I always like to make about that in terms of the characterization of the state as somebody who monitors public opinion data rather closely, support for SB 1070 in Arizona was like 2% higher than it was nationally. That was widely supported nationally. And the main reason it had such widespread support was the distinction that Fernanda made earlier. It had the word illegal attached to it. You put illegal as an adjective in front of something, and people don't like it, and they just want to say no. And because fundamentally, we're a law-abiding people. We like to think we play by the rules. And the sense is, if somebody else doesn't do that, we don't like that. And that was a lot of the basis of the wave of support nationally and in Arizona for SB 1070. As Fernanda noted, it was augmented here by some very emotional issues. You had the case of Mr. Krenz, who was the border rancher who was killed by somebody who was somebody who wasn't supposed to be on his land.
Now, I want to challenge you on something. You did mention, you said that we addressed we took drug dealing illegal immigrants, mm-hmm. we had crime committing illegal immigrants. We put them all into one basket, and we got a really ugly basket.
But perceptually, I'm saying this was a whole mess of stuff
right.
that tended to get lumped together.
Right, but what I would ask is, isn't that what you need to address illegal immigration? You don't want to take legal immigrants and lump them into an illegal immigration basket, because that doesn't make sense. You want to focus only on the illegal immigration to handle the issue of illegal immigration. Am I right?
Of course, but I don't want to put into that same basket somebody who's genuinely involved in human smuggling, and I would not include amongst that people who are smuggling themselves, and somebody who's smuggling drugs or people or whatever. Those are heavy-duty criminal acts. The act of taking yourself across the border for economic reasons may not comport exactly to the law, but it ain't in the same category as some of that other
okay.
stuff.
Okay. I wanted you to allow that clarification. Yeah. Now, being as you are all about public opinion research, this is right into your wheelhouse. I'm going to give you the same opportunity that Fernanda had as well as Ralph had. In what have you seen outside of the state? Overall, let's start overall. We will whittle it down in a moment. But overall, opinion of Arizona from blue states, red states, and the like outside of Arizona.
I think I would agree with what I've heard that the character of racist or whatever that some of the stuff here that of some of the people, the sheriff sweeps and things like that. He has his supporters, but it impresses some people as a little extreme overreaction, that too. But in terms of the people of Arizona and the perception of the state as a whole, I know this, we are more cast as a more conservative state than we really are. If by conservative we mean the attitudes of the people, the attitudes of the state overall in terms of the population are pretty close to the national average, a little bit to the right, but not by a whole lot. Mm-hmm. And something that Fernanda alluded to, but I can amplify, and I have earlier here, the rules of the game matter, and the way we conduct primaries and the way we have districts amplifies the right in the legislature. And so the legislature tends not to be a microcosm of the state. And to the extent that people get their attitudes about what the state is by looking at the legislature, they get that wrong.
Okay. Now, let's whittle it down. Let's go to public opinion outside of the state of our immigration policy, knowing that the immigration policy was, as I read it, pretty darn close to federal law.
Yeah.
Didn't really go outside the bounds of that federal law. Knowing that, did people see this as an overreach, or people see this as, well, no one else was going to do it, why wouldn't they?
I think people were with it for a while. There was
it meaning what?
I mean, a couple of years ago, SB 1070 was supported nationally.
Okay.
But I think what has evolved, it's sort of like people say, yes, we should enforce the law. Yes, we should have a secure border. But then you probe people and you say, well, I'm not up for taking 11 million people and trying to move out of this country. If you ask people a balanced question that says, if people come, they pay a fine, they pay their back taxes, you know, they basically are good citizens, they don't have a criminal, should there be a path to citizenship? There is a pretty substantial majority of this country that says yes. That's how most people on most issues are in sort of some middle, sensible center.
Okay.
And now this is what the right would characterize as amnesty. If you ask people about amnesty, they'd say no, but they're saying, you know, pay your taxes, pay your back taxes, pay some sort of a fine, learn English, stay out of trouble, be a model citizen, and basically most people are willing to adopt a wealth.
And then you mentioned Reagan amnesty, and then they don't know which way to go.
That confuses the heck out of them, because Ronald Reagan is the patron saint of the Republican Party.
What do you mean he gave people amnesty?
He did real amnesty. None of this half-baked amnesty they're talking about. He did the real thing where he just said, okay, all is forgiven.
So now you've seen public opinion go up, down. You've seen it stay flat. What does, if Arizona had a negative image outside of this state, what could you see, either whether it's the current Medicaid bill that was passed, the budget, education, what would Arizona need to rise to prominence nationwide?
I think what we need is just some calm, careful leadership without ruffling the feathers in any sort of major way.
Not us as Arizona.
Well, it's time, I think, for calmer heads to prevail. I can't think of any grand sweeping gesture that we should do. How about just don't mess something up? We have an awful lot going for us in this state over the long haul. Just don't mess it up.
You know what I think it is? We find stable ground and then we look for a shovel.
Yeah,
that's basically Arizona's MO, and when we usually do that gubernatorially.
We've had a succession of one indicted governor. We've had an impeached governor, yes. Indicted, and we've had a series.
We like to mix it up here in Arizona.
It's been a very interesting series of governors, and one of the byproducts of that is all of a sudden politicians are being elected to Secretary of State, which seems to only have a single political function, which is you're next in line if the governor messes
up. It's the vice governor. As
John McCain has pointed out, the main function of which is to inquire daily into the health of the president.
But I'll tell you this: bottom line is, we're proud of our state. We know our state has good intentions, all from a governor standpoint, from a legislative standpoint, and I think we're on the right track. You?
I think with some calm days ahead, we could turn it around.
All right. Well, sounds good to me. Dr. Mike O'Neill, I'm Mike Russell. Special thanks to Fernanda Santos and Ralph Hallow. This has been The Think Tank right here on News Talk 92.3 KTAR.